welcome to Funny Business. I'm Rob. Locke's here too. And today we have an absolute belter of a guest, Dom Tomato, parkour extraordinaire.
King, legend, icon. I don't know. There's a few things you could say, but honestly, he could be one of the coolest dudes I've ever met.
Inspirational guy. And just the way his brain works and how impressive his body is too. You know what I mean? To be able to like absorb some of the movements that he's done over a long period of time. Like yeah. Me and you get sore from getting up off the couch.
Honestly, I had problems with my hips over the holidays because I've spent so much time on the couch.
Apparently, you called them couch hips or something,
didn't you? Couch hips or something. I could barely walk. Honestly, it was a big problem. But maybe I should get into some parkour, some free running and I don't know, test the body a bit because I feel like it hasn't done much in a while.
Maybe just start with some standing, some basic standing and walking.
A little bit. I was thinking about the other day, I used to play cricket and do all that sort of thing and I'd be spending a lot of time on my feet. Nowadays, I spend a lot of time in the chair, hunched over, editing pods.
Couch hips.
But honestly, Dom Tomato, the story is unreal. But the big thing I got from the chat was the drive, like the obsessive nature of him and what he loves about parkour. And he just lives and breathes it. And I feel like that's a big recipe or big ingredient for success, I feel like.
Especially charting your own path in a new sport, in a new industry, and the athlete mindset to make stuff happen. And his background that he had to like grind to make it work to become a professional in this, what he does now. And if you haven't already, go and check out some of his clips of some of the things that he does. It'll blow your mind. Enjoy the chat. Dom, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Dominic DiTommaso. I go by Dom Tomato on most social platforms because my last name is Tommaso, rhymes with tomato, easiest way to do it. I do parkour and free running full time, which is the art of jumping on stuff and landing it most of the time. I have built a large social media following and become one of the most followed athletes in the sport of parkour, and have managed to, for almost the last 7 years now, make myself a living or a professional career in the sport.
I love that. I was listening to an episode with Tony Hawk talk about like skateboarding and stuff and breaking new ground and like learning how to monetize and make a living from a sport that you love. Like it feels kind of similar to that parkour thing where there was a few people sort of rolling around, but it seems like it's grown and grown and grown and there's all these different things that you can do attached to it, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, Tony Hawk was a huge pioneer in like the street sport space of making a business or an entrepreneurial pathway. And now with social media, we're so much more advanced with the tools that we're given to make those leaps and bounds. And so when I began, it was very stagnant. I think it was YouTube and forums and the community was small but very tight-knit. And as the sport blossoms, so is the connectivity between the community globally. And now you've got all these tools to use to put your own name out there instead of working just with, you know, traditional media means.
How have you seen the sport evolve over the last few years? Like in terms of like maybe like popularity, number of people who have been in it, or just like maybe like just general understanding of what it is?
Well, it's been a kind of roller coaster of a journey. So when I began, there was this huge uprising and huge attention for it. There was the James Bond film 007 Casino Royale. There was also a huge documentary series by BBC Jump Britain and Jump London, which brought it very much to the forefront of the attention in the UK, which is now the most prevalent community in the globe. And then it kind of built and built and built, and we had world championships and small competitions like Red Bull Art of Motion popping up and forming probably till about 2013 or 14. It was really coming up in steam, and then it kind of plateaued for a little while. We saw like the old guard kind of move on, or, you know, there wasn't places to hold all the professionals. So they ended up turning over to other industries, going to things like film or stunts. And then with the new generation coming in, we've seen more of a slow, consistent build since like just before COVID. There's been a really big uptick in the amount of people practicing, the number of people showing up to events, the number of competitions globally. So it's kind of gone up, down or flat, and then really started to pick up at a consistent pace now. And I feel like since the world has started connecting again and being able to fly everywhere and the access to the globe is kind of back from the pandemic, there's been a real a united front in parkour to participate in like a global sense and a community and a culture and one shebang.
Locke mentioned Tony Hawk before, and I think of people like Nigel Houston, who does like the street skating stuff, where I imagine you must be a bit the same. Like you walk around the streets and you see the world a bit differently. It's like,
I could jump off
that. Fuck, I'm going to jump off that. I'm going to go and do a flip here.
Like, mate, it's all a playground. It's a consistent, like, it's almost like I have eagle vision in Assassin's Creed, where you're just constantly looking at highlighted objects and different ways that you can interact with the space. And I personally love the street setups way more than the indoor setups, just because they offer a real individual opportunity. Like, you can't just set it up. It's built the way it is, and you've got to adapt yourself to it.
What about like deciding what's possible? You know, when you're looking at it and you're going, hey, can I actually do that? Is that a dream? Like, how many times do you scope out different things? Or is it just like you see it and you're like, I reckon that we can do it?
I feel like now more days I have more nowadays I have that like vision to just be like, oh yeah, I can kind of do that from years of experience. But when you're setting up for a trick, you always do the math. You show your work, so you make sure you check the surfaces. You make sure that you warm up your body proficiently. If you can, you want to do like a smaller version or a test version of the move. A lot of the challenges don't have life or death stakes. You know, that's the viral clips you see on the internet. But a lot of stuff is, you know, there's a way to practice a smaller version or do it safely and attempt it a few times before you get that one stick. So it is quite methodical, and a lot of athletes are taught from a very young age how to break down these challenges and how to make sure that they are training in a manner that isn't going out and just sending it or going out and just operating on intuitive knowledge, because that's where the danger and the margin of error can be increased.
I heard you talk about like 80% like structured challenge or whatever, and then 20% like improvisation. Is that still something that you go by?
Yeah, I mean, I leave more wiggle room than I would recommend to most athletes. It's just I'm not as consistent and I'm used to falling over. But I also have always operated in a space where my confidence slightly outshines my physical skill or ability. I'm always like, yeah, I'm this good. And then, you know, that's where those little mishaps happen. So we always recommend as a community to younger athletes not to be taking that risk. You want to be pretty much 90, 95% sure. And the 5% is the normal margin of error that you'd have, like crossing a road or driving a car or those things. Like, they're very infinitesimal. When you're focused and you're up on the hockey and doing the right thing, the margin of error is very small, and you're not jumping if there's any kind of sense of fear or hesitation to go off the gap. You'd never go in those moments. You need to feel when the moment is right, and then very much trust in your body and the process to stay in a game.
Is there a big element of like learning the correct technique to fall? So like when you are fucking one up and you think you've got this one done, it's like how to safely get out of tricks and safely, well, you can't always do it. I'm sure that there's been a bunch of times where yourself and others around you have not been able to do that, but is that a big factor too?
Yeah, I mean, falling over is one aspect, but I think with everything, we really teach fundamental techniques of how to jump, how to climb, how to land. Landing is one of the most crucial factors because you're landing on a number of different angles, surfaces, coming with a different amount of force every time. And so what people don't see is those real fundamental key things taught online, because they're not as exciting, they're not as you know, viral, or you know, whatever people want to call it, that are going to get numbers and numbers of eyes on that. But it is a crucial factor in all of parkour that you learn the skills and you learn the techniques involved. That way, when you're putting yourself at more risk by doing bigger challenges, you can stack it, and you've got the experience to kind of do things without making them wildly dangerous or like hurting yourself to a certain degree. You know, you can adapt, and it may be uncomfortable and you might get a slight bruise, but you're coming out of it in the safest way possible.
What about from an athlete perspective? Like we've had a bunch, like saying off air before, we've had a bunch of different athletes from like a training perspective and getting your body from either recovery or a strength. Is that something that you've had to like change how you train to get your body right to be able to do these different things?
I wouldn't say I'm the best example in that scenario. I kind of just hit my body up against the anvil as much as I could when I was in my 20s, and managed to get through it pretty unscathed. But I know that it is crucial. If you haven't done years of fundamental sport training or years of strength and conditioning leading up to those, that the body doesn't handle large impact, huge explosive power on concrete very well. So it is a key with a lot of athletes to, and now myself, now that I'm over 30, I'm doing a lot of like mobility conditioning, activation work for the right muscles, making sure everything is firing in the right way so that my recovery and my performance is better. It is like, it goes hand in hand with any sort of professional craft. If you want to be doing it at a high level, it requires supplementary training.
I saw you had a background in ice skating and I was watching some of the videos. I was like, bro, you were graceful. You know, like you were spinning. You had me in
what
a trance.
Happened?
yeah, bro. Honestly, I was like, this guy's crazy. How good is he? Balanced. You know, can you tell us how you got into parkour from that?
Well, yes, I grew up doing figure skating. My big sister was an ice skater as well, and she was very high level, went to world championships and that sort of thing. And so I just followed in her vein. And when I got to 15, I saw parkour on the internet and I was like instantly drawn to it. It seemed like the answer to the question I was always asking, like, God, I want to go do action stuff. I want to be like a ninja, but I don't like martial arts. It's a little too like confrontational for me. You know, I'd be like punching people, saying like, sorry, sorry, sorry. It's like, that's not really my craft. So it found like the scenes I would see in action movies that I get excited by, like things like, you know, in, I think it was X-Men, there's like a Wolverine scene where he's like doing incredible feats. And I would always be excited by that and like catching the train home, swinging around and being like, oh, this is like what I want to do, but couldn't put like a rhyme to reason or like a practice to it. And when I found parkour, that was like the thing. And I instantly went out of my lunch break and tried it. And at that point, I was also doing a full-time dance curriculum at a high school. And yeah, working and everything else over the next 2-3 years just fell off to the side. And parkour was just the only constant. Like, even though I've been doing skating 6 days a week for almost 15 years of my life, I was like, yeah, I'm into this thing now. And figure skating definitely gave me, as an athlete, the tools I needed to be professional or successful or become high level at parkour, because I understood the fundamental level of training and passion and desire that goes into those things. If you want to be successful, you really do need to push above and beyond. Even if you have a general knack for it or a talent, nothing comes without hard work. And doing a sport to a high level at a young age very much showed me that that is possible, but it's also a lot of work and it takes a lot of dedication.
To get to the point that you have now, I know you mentioned off air before around like you personally building your brand to allow you to get to a point to be able to do this full time. Were there any sort of moments or fork in the road moments where you're like the doors opened or like maybe this isn't going to work out or something crazy's happened and you sort of got a break?
Yeah, there's like a few different moments that were like integral or key, not just sportively, but things that happened with the career path that really took things to where they are now. And I, first off, when I wanted to make a career in parkour, I was very young. And even with my first team ever, I tried to get like camera sponsorships and some way to get paid doing the sport. I'd already kind of in my head was like, I see these guys on the internet doing this professionally or like getting paid to do this. So I want to be in the same league as quickly as I can. And then for a couple of years after that, I kind of met the Sydney parkour community, learned more about the culture and the sport, still wanted to really succeed, but focused more on the sporting side of things. I would produce videos and that was more of an artistic expression. And then I turned 18, had 3 months where I was kind of partying and not as involved in the sport. And when I came back to it, I was zoned in. I was like, this is what I've been missing this. This is like my purpose. This is what I'm meant to be doing with my time. And from there, I methodically, like I became a garbage man for 4.5 years to find a job where I could work in the mornings, train in the afternoons, and really push the idea of becoming a professional athlete. And the reason I was so motivated is I got to a point where I went to Thailand. And the forming of my now team, Team Farang, was there. And I was there at the birthing point of it. But I had to go home early because I ran out of money and wasn't really in the same mindset of setting up this business as the rest of the boys who were a few years older than me. And that was like a real kick in the pants where I was like, you know what? Like, if I want to do this full time, I do need to have a certain like maturity and mindset to what I'm trying to achieve with it and actually have goals. So I, from there was very set on becoming a Red Bull athlete. And that would be kind of the linchpin or the point of success that I was driving towards for the next years leading into that. So I actually got to go to an international event for parkour for the first time. This was 2014. And that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to ask my local gym if they can give me a small fee to be a sponsored athlete, because I was working for them as a coach and wearing their gear overseas. And Apes, the gym in Australia, in Sydney, actually were the first ones to really give me the keys, the opportunity. It was a very small paycheck per week. It just covered my rent and a little bit, but it was enough for me to like get other jobs through parkour that would pay like, whatever other luxuries, like the rest of the food for the week and stuff like that. And really pursue the dream of being a parkour athlete. And I did tell them, JP, the guy who runs it, in my first meeting, I was like, I really want to be a Red Bull sponsored athlete. That's the goal. But I need to take that leap of faith and stop working with the full-time paycheck and security and just give this like a full legitimate go. And so from there, I went to a Red Bull Art of Motion competition. I qualified through, but injured myself. And then it was just on from there. So the next year, I saved up as much as I could. Went away for 3 months, did a whole bunch of different events in Europe, finishing in again Art of Motion, which I made it through on the on-site qualifiers, and then competed in the competition. But I was still just making like odd money here from parkour jobs. I wasn't really secure in the sport. And then I'd had contact with Red Bull from doing the competition, but we hadn't officialized a relationship of any sort. So 2016, I ended up joining Team Farang, the team that I hadn't joined originally. And so we started working together there. And then 2017, August, I managed to get sponsored by Red Bull Australia. And that was really the kind of ceiling moment of security and professional part in the sport, because now I was being flown over to do projects. I was receiving a steady paycheck as an athlete. And though they're not huge, they're still substantial enough with the perks for you to kind of make more moves and then, pay rent and more luxury, like luxurious things without having to stress as much. So that was 2017 was the real point where I feel like things became solidified as a professional athlete. And then there's been other little markers along the way, but that was like the blossom point.
Must have been a cool moment for you, bro, to hear like you did worked as a garbo for 4.5 years, had a crack of like
Chasing the dream.
chasing the dream and making things happen. Like to have that length of time saying, I'm good enough to be at that level, this is what I want to get to.
Belief,
What did you do to celebrate when you got to that point? Surely there was like at least a couple of weeks going, I'm not doing any jumps this week,
That's just not the way my brain operates. If anything, it was like permission to go harder. It was like, okay, now this is my full-time career. I have a bit more security. I can completely envelop myself, because I think the whole thing, to give it context, is I'm obsessed with parkour. I can't get enough of it. Even after 17 years of doing it, I wake up thinking about, like, go to bed thinking about jumps. Like, my brain is completely enveloped by the sport. And so the more I kept receiving back for all the hard work that I would put in, it would just encourage me to do more and work. And it really took me like until probably this year or last year to stop out like overdoing it and overtraining and just doing too much, just putting myself through the ringer like year after year, because I was enjoying the fuck out of it. And then now it's more about continuing the passion without just abusing my body in my 30s. And finding a way to kind of monetize it better than the previous years. Something I never focused on was the financial gain or the monetary value of it. I was like, cool, I'm getting paid enough. Like, it was still, I don't think I was ever hitting more than like 40, 50K a year at that point. And it was like max. That was like a good year. but it was still enough because I was getting flow in places. I was staying a lot of places for free. Fortunately, I had friends all over the globe who were willing to house me for like months at a time while we go training together and make all these videos and live that experience. So I was very focused on the experience and not making a huge amount of money. That was always the shtick. And over the past 2 years, I've gone into a relationship and become engaged recently. And that's been a huge motivator to kind of change my scope and be like, cool, now I would like to, build more of a business and more of a structure in there, but it's still quite a recent endeavor on my end.
What about like momentum? You know what I mean? When you start to feel good, how important is it to sort of keep things rolling and keep things going, like set new goals and keep pushing it?
Yeah, that's actually really an insightful question, because there's one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was when you receive like a wave of attention or a wave of influx for popularity, business, whatever it is, to continue to push to ride that wave, get back it up, get back on the wave as much as possible and continue to ride it as it grows. But then in the same sense, when you're doing it in professional sport, that can be very taxing and tolling on the body. And so you do need to find ways to innovate in that space. And then when I got sponsored by Red Bull, when I achieved the dream that I had been working towards for so many years, I did get a little lost and I did get a little like, what do I do now with my, like, now do I just continue doing the same things I've been doing to achieve that goal? And so there was a bit of a transformation stage, and one of my peers, Sean Wood, was very influential in reframing the way that I was kind of encapsulating the sport. And so I focused more on building my own media and making kind of a base in travel and events and having a schedule that was very based in the parkour space in Europe during the summer there, just going over months at a time and just being available for every single event that I could, showing up, being present as much as I could in the global community.
I would love to get into a little bit about maybe like how important the clips aspect and the social media presence has been for building the pathway, and where do you think it's going to go? Like what goes into creating the clips, mm-hmm. and getting the shots, and like how much effort and thought process from your perspective? Like you sound like the fact that you are doing some producing some other clips and stuff. Are you thinking about how they should be shot and what angles you want to be capturing for these sort of different things?
There's always been like a rudimentary inclusion of videography within my parkour space. I had a bunch of different DSLR cameras when we were starting and was really into the shooting. But I did make a conscious effort at one point to put the camera down and decide to be in front of the camera more. And there is like a directorial position that you get in when you're trying to find the right shots. But I think it depends on the movement or what you're trying to capture. A lot of athletes do focus more on that visual side and try to make sure that whatever they're going to put out does have that production level and that value. And again, same with the business stuff. It's only really been a recent uptick for me. If anything, I was like in protest of that high production value and was like, I'm just documenting the moves I do. I'm just going to do the biggest, sickest moves I can do. I don't, shoot it from the side all the way back. Just show the whole thing. Don't even worry about the nuance of like the trick or the film or the magic of the moment. The magic is that thing. And like doubling down on that and staying really focused on that meant that I could like in the end end up doing things that were like way more intense and high level, because I was never being hunkered down by if the shot's right, if the drone's up in the air. And that's something that really drove me away from doing stunt work and like working in the film and television industry, was that it is a lot of hurry up and wait, and doing things that were staged or to soft surfaces and not actually doing it for real was less enticing. It was just less exciting as a process. And so even though there is a huge avenue for business gain in that world, I was just not as excited by it and really wanted to focus on industry building within the sport itself.
I feel like it's the legacy stuff, brother. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, it's for the people coming up. That's the magic, isn't it? The pathways that you're creating, doing that sort of stuff.
It is really important. And I think there has been less focus on it from my senior peers in the sport over the years is, you know, it's a really hard thing to do, and it's really hard to get in a position where you're able to access that legacy building pathway. We see teams like Stora and teams like Team Farang who were very integral and successful in these early days, and other athletes have followed that pathway and journey. I think we have less individual athletes who have made it to that stage, as it, again, is just a small industry with not enough spots to hold that many people. And it's hard to be a professional athlete for a long time in the sport. Like the young generation that's coming up now, the level has just changed. Everything that was world-class 2 or 3 years ago is standard now. And it's very hard to impress like the general population with parkour because it's been so saturated on the internet. And yeah, I would just like to be a part of, like, even if it's not the character of me, just I want to be involved in bringing a stability and a structure and an industry standard to parkour for the younger athletes so that we can see a lot more of them sustain a living in the future doing that, even if it is individually.
A bit like memorable runs. Like, I know for people who are listening might not be able to like see the clip that we're talking about, but have you got any memorable ones that stand out for you that you're like, I can't believe I did that?
I wish they were runs, but I'm very much known for my singular movement, like boom, wow factor. But I, off the top of my head, I would say there is a front flip that I'm most known for, which is down the iconic skating stair set, Lyon 25. And it's just 25 concrete, quite long stairs, biggest jump to ever be done on a skateboard stair set. And I did it as a front flip. And that was like a very game-changing moment for my career where it was taking something that was huge in another subculture and bringing it across to our sport. And that will forever kind of stay as like a legacy moment for my career. It really put me in a new spotlight and gained me a whole new perspective of people. And I think it also helped the sport legitimize more from the office like parkour joke to something like skateboarding, where people are like, oh, this is pretty damn serious. Like, this is pretty intense. And then I also fell in China a couple of years before that in 2017 and fractured my skull. And it was just a horrendous fall that I ended up getting up and walking away from with just like crushed and dislocated wrist. So like, even though I fractured my skull, it was the doctor was like, just don't hit your head for another week. And that, I think that built some kind of mythos, because I was known for falling over already, but then just hitting the deck up from 6 meters and getting up and being like, I'm fine and stuff like that, I think built some sort of mythos or craziness around my like indestructibility, because I think my calling card is not a specific move or like power or strength. It's just like being like really durable. It's unknown.
Crazy, man. That's,
yeah.
I saw some of the ones you're jumping into walls with your shoulder and stuff like that, like using the body and like putting it on the line.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff, bro.
Thanks, man. It feels so normal to me. I feel like that's like my everyday is to like walk along high ledges and do like quite large jumps. I like a lot of the time I feel like I'm not hitting that threshold at all. I'm like, oh yeah, this is just a fun challenge because I've done so much leading up to that. But I can tell objectively, like if I asked any of my mates that don't do parkour to do like just stand on something high, like what the fuck are you talking about? There's no way I'm doing that. That's absolutely outrageous. I'm like, oh yeah, it is outrageous. That's true. It's just like, that's just what I do. I don't have a license, so driving is outrageous to me. But my mates drive around, I'm like, that's crazy, man.
So I just don't have a license. Mate. I didn't get my license until I was 28, and I copped it for years. I owe so many people so many lifts.
So many.
I just watched too much Entourage, Dom, and I was like, maybe I'm Vinny Chase, but maybe I'm Turtle. You know what I mean? I was just like,
my go-to is, I just tell people I use the power of friendship to get around. You know, that's the fuel that I...
You and Hawker are similar in that sense, you know?
Yeah, it's like... what is it? I'm codependent. So I was just like, it's making me very social. You know what I mean? Like, I have to talk to people. Yeah. I have to sort of win them over, you know?
What about What about like, do you get scared? Do you have sense of fear? Like, is that something like, is it like conquering fear? Is it something that you have like progressed through?
I'm not inherently phobic. Like, I don't have many like irrational fears or like get panicky about a lot of shit. But when I'm doing the jumps, nowadays there's like a healthy level of fear of like, if I fall, I could die if I'm doing like a roof gap or something like that. But parkour in itself is very much about learning to conquer that moment of fear and to overcome that irrational side of your brain that's telling you, you know, that you're going to fall and you're going to die, you're going to slip, you're going to hurt yourself. And realizing that if you've done movements thousands of times on the floor in a safe environment and you're going to do it that one time there, that it is the same and you do have the control. And parkour at height is really about like proving that to yourself. So a lot of people do nice. they do fear building exercises at lower levels of movement. So just walking along high ledges or balancing on things that aren't death defying heights, but still elicit that fear response. And one of the favorite places for me to practice that in Sydney is a spot where it's got a beam and some poles over water. And that way you're practicing the fear element of falling in and falling off. It still feels just as real as doing it at height, but you haven't got the consequence. To go further down, I don't really struggle with fear though. That's the durable calling card thing is like, I'm really confident and I'm like, oh, most of the time this has worked, so why wouldn't it work? But I've helped a lot of athletes who would start by taking 45 minutes to break down a challenge, sitting at the top of it, going back down, prepping, coming away, having a drink. And we'd work on that process and really shave it down to a very efficient, logical process. And seeing things in a very black and white, rational, no gray area way, that really helps make intuitive decisions and trust your gut. And then the more you're positively reinforced by landing or doing or achieving, you can then trust in that practice and that, you know, that process more and more and more and drill it down till it's very easy. And I think that permeates into wider life as well. You know, practice something and I'll get it under the belt and then it's easy to deal with.
I just feel like that too. Like you see these people who are on TV, who do lots of live television. You're like, they're so good. They're so articulate. There's no stuff ups, but it's like they've been grinding and doing this for freaking 20 years, you know? So they've been practicing the hard stuff a lot. So it makes it look really easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a craft in itself. And I always use the adage that you get good at something you don't realize, like much like you grow your hair and you don't realize it's long, you know, it's just happening every day, but, getting longer and longer. your beard, you know, you could grow your beard out.
My shoulder hairs.
Oh, mate, mine I get filthy long ones and I don't understand. Like, it's just, then just isolated solo ones. Just like the length of my. Yeah.
As you get older, man, now, like you mentioned before, like, been doing this now for, if I get it right, 17 years or whatever. Like, do you think differently about what does the next 10 years look like for you and like body doing like difficult tricks and difficult jumps and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I before 30 believed that everyone was talking shit, and when you get to 30, like it doesn't slow down. I was like, whatever, I'm in like the best shape I've ever been in at 29, and then I got injured at 30, so that was a good reality check. like I hurt my ankles pretty seriously and took like a bit of time to recover, but now I'm back to full health. I really think it is, you know, I liken it to. But supposedly when Jordan took his year off and came back, when he came back, his whole game looked different. It's like there was a lot more strength and conditioning. There was a lot more focus on the longevity and making the right choices and making sure that things weren't being overdone because you can't recover to the same stage. And so now it's very much focused on, I want to do my high performance stuff at the level that I've already attained. I'm not trying to progress to a bigger level. I think the size of stuff that I'm doing, I'm happy with. I'm like, I don't need to improve on that. Maybe there'll be some like progressions of skills, but you know, I don't think I'm going to be out doing bigger front flips than I've ever done. They're just not good for my body at 30. I still do some, but I'm not going to be doing them day in, day out. And then there's a lot more focus on the gym, spending time in the gymnastic center, working on like coordination, but then also in like the exercise gym, lifting small light weights just to make sure that all the stabilizing parts are strengthened, making sure that the body's balanced and in tune before I go out and do the high performance stuff.
I like that. Hey, what are you into outside of parkour? Like what's life look like? How do you switch off? One of the questions we ask all our guests is sort of a bit of a mental,
good segue.
A bit of a mental health one. So what do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
I'm a very social person, so I basically go and hang out with my friends in any capacity, and that makes me feel much better about my life. If I sit by myself and stew for a day or so, I just feel like almost like lost. I'm just like, like this. Yeah, you know the feeling you get after flying for like 24 hours, and you're just kind of like, what are the days? That just happens to me without socializing. I feel like that's my cure. But I'm not into anything else except for parkour. Like we met, or like maybe anything physical. I went to the park yesterday and threw the frisbee with my mates for a couple of hours, and that was super fun. But it's like, yeah, unless it's physical or active, all I want to do is just like watch anime. It's really boring. But I enjoy like there's a lot of stuff that goes into behind the scenes of parkour, like the video ideation, a lot of calls for working with editors, working with brands, working like I've got an agent and then Red Bull, my like sponsor full time. So there's a lot of different like parts that to try and keep track of and a lot of different bits that you're constantly doing. So my life's kind of enveloped by the sport and the career because they're all entwined into my life. So other than that, I very much focus on my relationship. I just time prioritize time with my fiance and just being really focused on being healthy and strong in that capacity because then I feel empowered in my work, passion life around that. So yeah, I think to be really good at stuff, you really need to focus time and energy on it. And so those are the two like main things. And then I just hang out with my friends to feel level.
Are there any other athletes outside of your sport that you
You
take
mentioned
inspiration for?
MJ,
You
yeah.
mentioned MJ before, and like, is there anyone else that you like to draw? Like, hey, I like how they do X, Y, Z. I feel like I could incorporate that in a little bit into what I do.
Yeah, I'd say so there's a BMX rider from the UK, Matt Jones. I met him recently, but he's always been someone that's innovative in his space that I've always been inspired by. He's just like kind of hitting the same like really high level stuff, but now working in a more media driven space. And then Danny Mackeskill is kind of like a longtime Red Bull creator in the trail biking space that I've always just thought his vision and his creativity for the media side of the sport was really, really impressive and really drawn to it. But for the most part, I'm actually super inspired by the athletes within parkour. You know, as I said, I'm obsessed with it. But then there's so many people within this small niche community that are amazing, talented, crazy athletes or entrepreneurs or videographers or creatives, artists, music, talent artists. So I find my inspiration from within my community so much. And I really like there's more than 1,000 athletes I could kind of just riddle off that have influenced me over the years. And they can be from, you know, the biggest athletes in the sport. Like an example is Joe Scandrett, an incredible person to watch online. It's just like one of my best friends, but also just an awe-inspiring. Everything is wow. And then you'll have lesser known athletes in the sport. Like an example I'm trying to think of is Kobe Marcus, who's this young American who's relatively only kind of become known in the last few years, but that drive and that hunger and that push that he's got right now and this fresh kind of eyes for spots and flavor movement wise is really exciting to see. So it really comes from everywhere within that central community.
I love that. It's like developing a style too, isn't it? Like what's your kind of style when you first start? What do you want to do? Is there many different variations and stuff in parkour?
Yeah, creativity is super encouraged, like almost more than difficulty in the sport. We're really like inclusive, and that's one of the most exciting things about the sport is that we want you to express yourself through movement the way you want to do it. It's your movement path, it's your movement journey. You're going to get to your version of a black belt if we all encourage that. And it also opens doors and avenues for the sport. We've almost got now like different sects within the community that do like more creative facets of movement and more flow style of movement. And then you've got your competition athletes and then you've got your street athletes and they all feed back into each other and, you know, are all really respected across the board. And yeah, personal style is something that's more encouraged than like traditional sports. When I did figure skating, everything was encouraged to be uniform with a little bit of like self-expression, but it has to fit this mold. And in parkour, do what you do. Do what you do. As long as it's safe, good for you, and you're enjoying yourself, that's all we care.
as a kid, Locke reckons he was a super talented on the pogo stick.
Yeah, do you think that's I want to bring that back. I've seen Pogo Man on Instagram, but honestly, I don't think a pogo stick could support my weight at the moment.
I have to get it industry built, you know?
Yeah, take it 100%. Out
the back and get some carbonized steel there.
Honestly, the pogo stick, I feel like watching people just go bananas on that up and down the stairs off the walls. I don't know, have you tried that before?
Yeah, we did it. We did a show for Sydney Chinese New Year once that they just gave us pogo sticks. And we were like, okay, right. None of us had done it before, but we all did flips and parkour. So we didn't get to the stage of flipping, but we were having some pretty fun challenges, like knocking around them. And I think when you're with a bunch of other athletes, those things really excel. Like, you know, you can go out by yourself and have a jam, but when you're sharing ideas and there's kind of this interaction of encouragement happening as well, you can, yeah, have a wonderful time.
What about like meditation and stuff? Is that something that you get into or not really?
Parkour is my meditation, essentially. Like, yeah. If I feel any sort of anxiety or just feel down, I'll just go out and train. If it's a solo session, if it's going hanging out with friends, it just, for as in the most puritanical way I can put it, it feels like my calling. I just hate phrasing it like that.
Well, man, it's been unreal to chat to you. It's super early into 2024. What can we expect to see, or what are you excited about for this year?
This year is all about the YouTube. So if you want to go to my YouTube channel, Dom Tomato, check that out. I'm going to be focusing more on making engaging content pieces around parkour and making sure that the production level is up to today's standard. For the last 6 years, I've been making videos on iMovie and just kind of in protest being like, I'm not a content creator, I'm an athlete. So here's a documentation of what I'm doing and I care this much about it. And then I realized I was just making shitty videos. So they weren't terrible, but they just weren't, you know, up to scratch. So the focus is on that. And I'm going to be trying to find some more client work to do with my Instagram to kind of push the promotional value there. And then, yeah, just getting around to parkour events throughout Europe in the summer, making sure I get over to America for Camp Woodward. And ideally, I'll be able to shoot a few videos with Red Bull. Last year, we didn't get to do a project together, and those are some of the most exciting experiences. So if I can get another one of those under my belt, I'll be stoked.
Well, man, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. And I'm pumping to go jump off two stairs.
Start jumping off the roof.
Two stairs. Start small. Start small. Nice and soft and work your way up. Maybe half a stair first.
Good advice, mate. Good advice. Yeah. Thank you so much, brother.
I'll hit stop.
No, thank you, guys.
Big bad Dom Tomato, baby. His YouTube channel is rocking, The House, by the way. I've been watching it. It's like Big Brother style. He's like documenting his sort of journey and what he's doing. And to be honest, it's probably one of the best YouTube channels out there. So you should definitely check it out and subscribe.
Hey, if you're new to the Funny Business Podcast, we release guest episodes every week. Episodes coming out 3 times a week. Been here for 4 years now.
It's pumping a long time.
Out guests, number of episodes. We'll hit our 1,000th episode this year. Pretty wild, hey?
Are we getting better as we're getting older or not?
A bit like you and your couch chips, mate. Getting worse, I think. Getting slower, less mobile, less talented.
Deeper questions, though. I feel like we've been on our A-game since we've started this year. I feel like you've been pretty good. I've been very good. And I feel like that makes up about an 8 out of 9 out of 10.
I love when you pump your own tires. Hey, enjoy the rest of this chat and go back and listen to some other episodes you haven't already. And we'll see you next week.
Hey, Funny Business listeners, Caleb from SquareX here. I just wanted to jump on and let you guys know at the end of this ep, SquareX is currently open for investment. So if you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of the agricultural supply chains, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or to the Dream Big Social Club team to learn more.